Hello and welcome to the Space Cave. I'm David Huntsberger. Let's get right into it. Part two with the great Lisa Delarios, funny comedian. You might even recognize her from the show Storage Wars, which I think is so funny. We talk in this episode a lot about the vast experiences of our lives. And that one is so fitting and funny and out of the blue. And then yet when you hear it, you're like, oh yeah, she'd be great at that. And was. If you don't watch that show, she's really good at it. And has always been into antiques and just a very interesting person. As you've listened to an hour of her talking, you know that. So here's some more chatting with Lisa Delarios.
Back in.
We're back in with our lager.
With our taco truck lager. I still haven't finished. Oh, that's the end of the first one.
That's good.
Just really ripping through this.
That's about how, I think we're even. That's about how much I have left.
Nice.
I can just tell by the feel in my can.
Do you ever go to dinner or something, or just share a meal? I shouldn't say go to dinner, but share a meal with someone. And then you look down at some point and you either have no food or all of your food and it's vice versa. Like the percentages equal 100 and you have 80 and they have 20 or vice versa. And then you realize I've been talking too much.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They've eaten all their food. Or the opposite. I haven't said anything. I've just eaten all my food. I better chill in a little.
Yes, for sure. I feel like I'm more in the situation where I've eaten all my food because they've been talking.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like I'm friends with I'm friends with fast eaters and slow eaters, actually. I've got a mix. I've got a couple friends that are such slow eaters. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, I have only one friend that sticks out as outrageously slow, and it's impressive. Like, oh yeah, every time, I always forget how slow you eat. It's really impressive.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of annoying.
Yeah, like it's really pleasant to eat at the same pace as someone. It's a reaffirming, like, okay, all right, I'm not doing anything so bizarre here.
Yeah, and also it's like, I'm ready for dessert, I'm ready to leave, and you're just still picking at that mashed potato pile or whatever.
He just did, when we went to, you know, your workshop, you talked
Cobra.
About the big yawn, kind of like, now that one seemed like just tired, but I think he also might be getting a little cabin feverish and want to go out.
Yeah.
How did you read that one?
I love that you noticed that, David. I honestly feel like, well, first of all, I didn't see him yawn.
I mostly heard it and I looked down and he finishes his yawns with kind of a little shake.
Like, yeah.
Ugh.
I think because dog body language, stress signals, a dog, and you have to look at the context and the full body, like take in all of their body language when reading one of these signals. And a dog yawning when they're not just waking up from a nap really is a sign of stress.
Okay.
That a lot of people don't know and a lot of people miss. And stress, there can be all types of stress, just like with us, you know? So yeah, that could be him. Who knows? Like what happened right before he yawned?
I felt like he was walking around a little bit, kind of just bored or looking for either to go get some fresh air, change of scenery, and or be petted. Maybe he was just like, well, are you guys going to talk and I'm just supposed to lay here the whole time?
Also, sometimes transitions can be stressful for dogs. Like we took our headphones off and it felt like there was a shift in energy.
Ah.
And then we put our headphones back on. He might have gotten a little excited, like that we were going to get up and go outside and move around.
Ah.
Yeah. I mean, it's so amazing. And I feel like I've been training dogs now for 6 years and I feel like I'm just now really starting to fine-tune my ability to see these subtle signals. And it's a shame that they're so subtle, you know? I feel like dogs' lives would be so much easier if they were just like, a little uncomfortable here, you know? But instead, there's just like this little, you know, flick of the tongue on the nose. Yeah. That says, I'm uncomfortable. You know, I'm just going to turn my head ever so slightly to the side while still looking at you, which is the whale eye.
Yeah.
You know, most people who aren't obsessively listening to dog podcasts and reading dog behavior books and blah, 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 aren't noticing those things. But if it became like, I wish every single veterinarian office would give a handout here. This is dog body language 101. So many problems wouldn't happen, you know? I do feel like that.
That makes sense to me. I think I anthropomorphize.
Yeah, that is what I said. It's anthro.
Yeah.
Po.
Okay.
Morphize. Anthropomorphize.
God, I'm never going to get it. I used to say that word all the time, and now suddenly I sound like I'm having some sort of a attack to my synapses. But nowadays when they catch wild horses or Mustangs, they use helicopters and they funnel them into like these triangular pens.
Yeah.
Think of like indigenous people with no ability beyond just really running. You can set up like traps and stuff. And in the pre-helicopter days, they still caught wild horses, both like Westerners and, you know, European, I don't know what you'd call it, like settlers, I guess. But thinking of indigenous people, particularly in the States, catching horses and then getting them to do stuff. And with horses, like everyone kind of knows, oh, a horse has his ears pinned back. Or that horse is kind of swishing its tail. There would be something that any person could be like, that is not good.
Mm-hmm.
But little ones, and I would feel like if horses have 30, dogs have maybe 3,000. It just seems like it's much more complicated because they're in our lives a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
But horses have like, you know, if they're scared of something and you walk them up to it, their eyes are all big, their ears are pinned forward.
Right.
They're just like splay-footed and, you know, wide-legged in the front, ready to bolt at any second. And then the tarp shakes or whatever, and then they breathe, and then they go, and they lick and chew. And everyone's like, oh, good, good. They're licking and chewing, and like, if they have a bit that has any kind of a roller in it, you'll hear it. They'll be like moving their tongue and like giving themselves these sensations where...
Soothing?
Just soothing themselves and being like, okay, we're good. Just a tarp.
Okay.
It's just a tarp.
Yeah, those are calming signals.
Right.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't, you might not, I mean, you'd know it if you like... were aware that there was a tarp and your horse was ultra rigid. But I feel like with dogs sometimes it's a lot less, you might not notice they're scared and you might not notice they're calming and soothing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You'd walk right past it and be like, but you would be like, no, they just did five different things along there.
Yeah, but even me who has been studying dogs for some years, I miss it a lot and I feel like I'm starting to see it more clearly than I did. But yeah, like a dog, for example, shaking off, that's a calming signal. You'll notice dogs will do a full body shake after something kind of stressful.
Yeah.
Dogs do displacement behaviors. So they'll do displacement behaviors a lot when they're kind of confused and they don't know what they're supposed to do next. They'll be like, oh, what's the smell over here? I'm going to just like really smell this one spot in a way that seems strange considering we were just doing training. Oh, I've got this bad itch over here on my shoulder. I'm just going to keep itching this because I'm kind of stressed because I don't really know what you want from me right now. Those,
you know, like they tuck tail and run. They pinch down with their tail because their anal glands release this pheromone that essentially says to other dogs, I'm scared of you.
Mm-hmm.
And one year we were up in the mountains with Cobra and there was real fresh bear poop.
Mm.
And that was the second day. The first day, we were standing there, and then my in-laws go, check it out, check it out. And we look up on the ridge, and there's a bear. And the bear stopped and just looked at us for a while, like at a, you know, 100 yards or so.
Yeah.
I'm like, whoa, really pretty bear. And he was beside himself. It was like the scent got to him.
Uh-huh.
it wasn't immediate. Like, looking at the bear, like, hey, what's up? And then the scent wafted in, and he was tremoring, just so terrified. So then the next day, we see this really fresh bear poop, and before we could do anything, he's just rolling himself in it, as if to be like, you're better than me. I'm scared of you. Look at what I'm doing here. It was almost like to take on the scent, because had the bear smelled, I think there's no amount of tail clamping that could have kept those fear hormones in.
Now, that's interesting. I would like to – that's something I don't know, why dogs want to roll in poop or a weird smell.
I've never seen it with another dog like that. Like, a dog poops, another dog will sniff it. But it was like with the bear.
They don't roll in it.
They don't roll. It was immediate. It was like, whoa, that is something that can really harm me. I think my only defense is just to let it know, like, I'll serve you. You're better than me. Please don't. Come on. You're not going to eat what smells just like you, are you? Come on. I'm your friend.
I mean, that's what they did in The Walking Dead. Remember, they would just cover themselves in like...
Oh, okay.
And they in a dead zombie slime. They would just wipe a bunch of the dead zombie slime, and then they'd be like, eh. They're like, if we smell like them, they won't notice that we're alive. But I think that's worth a Google, because I'm not sure what the purpose is.
I mean, I just watching it thought, this is the only thing that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But I'd never seen it. I'd never heard of it. It was such a, it was immediate. It wasn't like he walked, it was like we went, oh, is that bear poop? And he was just in it. It was so quick.
He might like the smell. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's something I don't know. I'm curious to know. I've seen dogs roll in like fish smell.
Really?
Yeah. Like if you're on the beach and there's like a dead fish, dogs tend to want to roll in that for some reason. And I don't know. I mean, dogs are earthy.
That's true. You know, when I was, man, you and I are so similar in that, like, our animal history. But I remember, like, in Austin, you always had various interesting jobs.
Yes.
You know, like, your stand-up is so pleasant to watch because it's, like, a nice energy.
Oh, thanks.
It's really thought out. It's different. And, like, that whole, like, period of Austin comedy, not to get sidetracked too much, but, like, when I see what became popular at that time and currently, I'm just like, nothing makes any sense. Like, that group was so funny and so talented. And like,
that was a fun era.
Oh, so fun. And like, the driving force behind everyone was like to just be creative, just be silly.
Yeah.
And it was such a diverse group of styles.
Yeah.
And I feel like fairly diverse in like, you know, the general populace as well. But overall, like, you wouldn't see 20 comedians all get up and move their arms the same way and have the same energy. There's one-liner Jim, and then there's kind of ranty this person, and then there's silly, goofy Chuck. And that, you know, just like there were a variety of styles.
Yeah.
But yours was always the most like, I always felt like, man, Lisa gets it. She feels like she's been alive for like 200 years.
What? That's what I would say that about yours. Your comedy was very cerebral in a good way.
Oh,
like,
thanks.
Thinking and funny, and you're silly.
Oh,
you know, you physically are goofy and you embrace that. But yeah, like I was like, that dude thinks. He is thinking all the time. But you know what I think? That was like, this is going to make us sound so old. But when because, you know, I first did stand up in Austin 04 to 07.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back to New York.
Yeah.
And continue to do stand-up, among other things. And then I came back to Austin again from 2015 to 2017. And there were a few of the old-timers there still, but not many.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this whole new school of young comics. And they were so good. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, how do I even compete with these guys and gals that are like... Not that it is a competition, but it just felt kind of like, why do I even bother? Because, you know, here I've been trudging away at this at that point for 20 years. And they're like, you know, I'm seeing these comics that have been doing it for 1 year and they're amazing.
Yeah.
And you know what I think it is that they grew up studying, and it's like they got all these great kind of maybe like, I don't know. I guess because when I didn't ever study comedy. I was like 20 and I was like, I'm going to give this a shot. but this is a kid who hadn't had any performing experience. I didn't come from a theater background. I was shy. I was embarrassed to be in front of people. But I think that was the reason I did stand up. But I was funny. I mean, I knew I was funny with my friends, but as far as any performative aspect, I was not, that was not something I was ever raised or nurtured to do.
Yeah, I having, you know, when I did, which you did a couple times, my variety show, the Junk Show, and I would get, I mean, once you start like booking a show, which it mostly was just me asking my friends, but inevitably I'd get put on some sort of list as like, email this person as part of your blast for trying to get sets.
Yep.
Hey, I'm so-and-so, and this is my set, and all their stuff. And I'd try to watch as many videos as I could. And the thing that stood out was even the people that were bad at it knew all the moves.
Yes.
They looked very professional in doing it.
Yeah.
I talk about it all the time with like that era was so fun, the turn of the century, because it was like to get in the sign up line at an open mic meant you just had to sort of like magnetism be called there somehow. It was like a dog whistle of like, I don't know why, but I want to go try this out.
Yes.
And then the shy people were there, the people that you'd watch and be like, they just stared at the floor the whole time and like picked at their fingers, but there's something there, but like they're funny. And you'd see the person that whisked the, they would pull with their index finger and stream along the mic cord and drape it around them like a cape.
Yeah.
And they, there's something they must have seen someone do, but that was always like the funny guy at work would do that with his pager on his hip or his cell phone. And no matter how professional that person thinks they are looking, I can't stand this.
Yes.
And yet the person staring at the ground, like, there's something there.
Yeah, the Martha Kellys.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
The and Lynette LaMonica.
I didn't know her.
She was my roommate.
Ah.
She's no longer.
Oh, no. Lynette.
Yeah. But yeah, she was, yeah, you were gone then. But yeah, like the kind of weirdo wallflower, just like, I am so uncomfortable doing this.
Yeah.
But it's so funny. But they were so funny.
There was a person, I won't say his name because he might think this is a slight, but when I got to Austin, how long have you been doing it? Well, I used to come all the time and watch my friends. I was more of like a sketch guy. But so for like 5 years, I was just here at every open mic. I've been doing it 3 years. So technically about eight. And I would think, no, it's three.
It's
no
three.
No matter how much you watch. But he was also very good.
Uh-huh.
And so I think now the younger people that like, you could listen to podcasts about, here's how I started in stand-up. You can watch unlimited videos. You can watch, you can immerse yourself and for probably a year to 10 years straight, tip to tail, could watch a different hour of comedy without having to like repeat a single act.
Yeah.
You would have a pretty deep database of like the jokes, the styles, the mannerisms, all the stuff.
And there's YouTube videos, how to do stand up. And we didn't have any of that. And I think it's like work harder, not smarter, smarter, not harder. I mean, I just feel like my whole route in stand up comedy, I was simultaneously trying to figure out who I was as a human being and trying to not be terrified of standing up in front of people. Like, I was. It was like a full trying to develop a person. I don't know what that, but I feel like, I think there was no roadmap for us in a way.
But that's what it was like. When people say like old soul, I think that gets thrown around too much. But there was something about like when you say thinking a lot. But I would say that to virtually everyone at that time was like processing sort of existentially, like what has meaning? What has value? What is worth doing? And being silly and funny seemed to have as much weight as curing diseases or something. It just felt like, well, it's all kind of part of this weird thing that no one knows.
Yeah.
And when you walk around with that, that's an interesting group that comes together.
Yeah.
And I think that was like, that's what I started with like our varying careers and things to do, various odd jobs, and just trying to put it together. Like, what do I want to do? And who am I? And what is worthwhile when I would be shoeing horses? Which I wonder if there's anyone that I was like their horseshoer for years. I would see them every 6 weeks to 2 months, work on their horse, and they're like, I'm leaving to go to Austin. They're like, what? And then within a short period of time, like my name would be like on TV, or like I would come to the comedy club. And
I wonder if they're like, that can't be the guy that was like out there on a forge and an anvil, like shaping shoes for our horse.
That's amazing. First of all, I didn't know you were a horseshoer.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Oh yeah. In San Diego, when I had Smitty with me, every now and again, he'd just be roaming around. Like, you know, he'd mostly just lay by my truck while I was working. But every now and again, he'd run out into fresh, like certain types of manure and roll in it. And like, horses will sniff the ground a lot, and especially after you wash them. And this makes a ton of sense to me. What horses are doing is they're searching for a certain bacterial strain that sort of metabolizes their sweat. So they don't really need to be washed that much because this bacteria, when it's on them, their hair will be really soft and oily and natural oils because this bacteria works for them. So that if you watch any horse after you spray it off, just nose glued to the ground, it'll just mow the lawn, meaning like walk around the corral, and then it'll find a spot and it'll roll back and forth and get all dirty. So a lot of people will wash their horses and just leave them until they're totally dry. Like, don't you go roll in the dirt. But like Smitty would do, they would go roll in manure, but not all of it. Not all the time. Oh. So maybe that was a bear similar thing or something like that. But that was a bit tangential. But the unknowable things that are probably knowable, but to us when we watch it, like, why that bear poop? Why that dog poop? Or why that, you know, horse manure?
But it's not always knowable. I don't want to be here saying it's all knowable, because I will be the first to say, like, sometimes I'm like, I don't know why necessarily that dog is barking and lunging at the end of the leash. I don't know what the exact emotion is underlying, but I can tell you it's an emotion. It's not random. I can tell you that there is a reason that they are doing it. Often it's either to get something to move further away or because they want to get up closer to something. And the behaviors look actually pretty much identical and it could be, and then that's where the body language stuff comes in handy, is you can kind of look at their body language and go, okay, they're stressed out right now. You know, I can see, you know, the lip licking or the way that they're holding their tail. But you know, I don't always know what the hell's going on. Why are they barking? I've had dogs do very puzzling behaviors that I'm like, I just don't understand. So that's why it's better. It's like when you're trying to change behavior, it's best to just kind of, rather than throw out labels and start to try to, you know, and then end up anthropomorphizing and like, okay, I'm just going to look at this behavior and treat it like in the way that I kind of within these parameters.
Yeah.
You know, like a dog barking, let's say, in the house. My first thing is going to be like, where are they barking? When are they barking? What are the circumstances? What's the context? What happened right before the barking? They're always at the front window barking. I'm like, oh, okay. So they're visually triggered by seeing things. That's making them bark. So, you know, or if there's not a window, then I'm like, can they hear things? So they might be triggered by hearing like the jingle of a dog collar walking past the house, or
yeah,
you know.
I think the drive or the desire, maybe these are, I don't know if these two things connect, but I think they kind of do, in that like, it seems like your drive or goal is to understand these behaviors well enough to pair good dog owners with good dogs and create each by the dog owner knowing these behaviors and implementing them, and therefore they become better at knowing the dog becomes better behaved, it's a better pairing, and that's an ideal thing to like be able to give to people. That's a service that people be very, I would think, ambitious to achieve, because so many people are yanking their dog around and are frustrated or, oh, this damn dog.
And they don't know what to do.
Yeah. And you know, and some people grow up, ah, try, I got it.
Yeah.
And like for me, and so the connective thing with that is like, on one hand, there is there are bad dogs, neighborhood dogs that just are barking, they're tugging at the leash.
I would say no, they're not bad dogs.
Oh, you know what I mean? Like a dog that someone is not thrilled with. And then you have working dogs and whatever that may be, like, and what I grew up around, like cattle dogs, and always pretty gentle, usually dudes, but just kind of different whistles, just to, you know,
yeah.
The long one was get out around them in the front, because here, get behind my horse. Mm-hmm. They're just, and some hand signals, maybe duck dogs. My grandfather was really into like dogs that could go hunting with them,
mm-hmm.
and would send them away to like these facilities to get trained, and like the way they would have them, these bird dogs trained. And I think that has always appealed to me, to be like, oh, this dog and I like exist together and we can do cool stuff as like a team, whether
right.
that's tracking someone or working a herd of something and mm-hmm. or detecting a bomb. Like Smitty didn't really like dog parks. He would just like kind of hang out like, eh, I don't need these dudes
mm-hmm.
or they, I don't need these dogs. And there was also a ton of fleas like in San Diego, like we live yeah. kind of near the water. And so like I would go to this big park and he would be fairly close to the enclosed dog area, but I would just have him out. But I would just play fetch with him a ton. And then once he got kind of tired of running after it, I would just give him a breather by throwing it as high as I could. And in the course of his life, this became like, you know, you just toss a ball up to a dog underhanded and they catch it like, wow.
Yeah.
It turned from that into like, huck it from like your heel as hard as you could, as high as you could.
Mm-hmm.
Be like lost in the clouds. And then he would spot it like an outfielder and then like catch
oh,
it.
So
it was
satisfying.
So cool. And such
yeah.
And one time a police officer came because I think it was like people at the dog park are like, what's going on over here? I didn't see the car show up.
Oh.
I had just thrown it and I hear the footsteps and like the jingliness of the police attire. And then he catches it and the cop's just like, what? Did you just catch that? I'm like, yeah, yeah, we've been working. You want to see it? He goes, dude. I throw it again. He catches it again. He's like, you can do what you want, man. I'll see you later. And just, it was sort of like if you saw a dog, like, this dog's not a threat to run somewhere. He's not, he's, yes, he's off the leash. But
oh,
like,
that was why they were there, because he was off leash?
Off the leash.
Oh,
and like,
I see. Yeah. And then he's like, woo, your dog's well trained.
Yeah. Like, essentially, this is the leash. This
mm-hmm.
is, and I
mm-hmm.
I feel
yeah.
differently about that now. I wouldn't really be out in a park with a dog off a leash. I would try to find a more secluded area. But I was 100 yards from anyone, dog or person, when I was doing this. But still, it was like signs posted, like dog be on a leash. And I think just seeing a dog that was like engaged in something.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be weird to yell at someone if their dog was like actively searching and sniffing for a bomb or
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, moving a herd of sheep or something. You'd be like, hey, get that dog on a leash. You'd be like, well, no, it's this
right.
dog is really pretty independent and doing something
right.
with assistance.
Yeah. Well, these working dogs are... that's a whole nother relationship,
mm-hmm.
you know? I mean, that's kind of one of the problems, I think, with pet dogs. I mean, that's why, where these, quote, problem behaviors are coming up, because these dogs, basically we have a bunch of unemployed dogs, you know, and they're not getting their, they just feel unfulfilled. So you get problematic behaviors coming from that too, like, but those dogs living in the country that are herding or hunting, like those dogs are enriched, you know, their bucket is filled just right. So, you know, and they might even be using some aversive training tools, I don't know, to teach them. I don't, you know, when they get sent off and come back perfectly
right.
trained, who knows? But I, you know, it's a different relationship than the companion. I mean, we're
yeah.
asking our dogs to be our companion. And then, but we have all these expectations. Like, yeah, I feel like there's, people have an, they expect their dogs to, they're like annoyed that their dogs don't show up at their house being obedient.
Yeah.
You know, this obsession with obedience. It's like, what? They're their own being. And we're inviting them to come into our home and be our buddy and fulfill our, you know, dreams of what this looks like. And then they all of a sudden they get labeled, you know, they get labeled because the way they're behaving doesn't meet our expectations.
Yeah.
Rather than just accepting like, okay, this is the dog I got. How can I help them live harmoniously in this world that I've brought them into? You know, how can I make this easier for them? How can I teach them? I mean, it's not, and it's not intuitive. It's not easy. It's, you know, so I think people are doing the best that they can, but I do think there's, you know, and I that's why I think that it's good for especially dogs that are super smart and might have more, you know, just like I've worked with clients that are, let's say like a college student with a full-time job or like part-time college student and then working a lot of hours and they get a puppy Australian Shepherd. And I'm like, bad choice, bad move.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do this? And they're complaining because the dog is chewing furniture, nipping at their ankles, and they just are like, fix this. And I'm like, this is not a great environment for this dog. This dog's so frustrated, understimulated, you know. So there are bad matches for sure. And I worked with a dog who was a lab puppy. The woman who adopted or bought her from a breeder, she was older. She had some disabilities, like mobility issues. But she had always had labs. So she, like, you know, she didn't think about the new her versus the younger her who would take her lab out to the beach or do this or that. And that dog was, oh, so hard. Like, I felt so bad. It was like, no matter how many times I come to like take her out and try to work with her, like just being in that house, you know, 80% of the time without, or 90% of the time with very little, needs being met. The needs don't get met so often. I think that's a big problem.
Man, as you're talking about, when you started this story, I was like, oh, I remember this. And then as you went into it, like, oh, this ties exactly into this story. I didn't love it. You will not love it.
The listeners won't love it.
No one's going to love
this. If they're
this.
Still listening at this point.
Right, yeah.
If you're still there. This point, going into our third hour.
The difference between like a working dog, you think of like sled dogs, mm-hmm. and you're talking about vet bills, and when they have to feed 8 dogs that can tow the sled, and like a lot of times that is stripped or smoked meat or from a kill, like it was just, you know, backstrap from a deer or something,
wow.
and slopping it out to these dogs, and like, oh, they eat, there's just kind of the remnants of the salmon catch, or in
right.
those parts of the world, like the dog's thrilled to like get harnessed up, get attached to this, and then go home and like crawl into a hole,
mm-hmm.
very little attention, not a lot of petting and hey buddy, and yet psyched, pretty obedient, pretty good, and they'll be behind them. I only know this from like documentaries and things, but you see a sled dog team and they'll be like, ah, this one, see, he just doesn't have it, he's just running exactly like the other dog. I have hopes he'd turn into a leader, but I'm just not seeing it. All you're seeing is feet moving. Like, what are you seeing?
What are you seeing?
Like, when you get so specialized in something, uh-huh. you can pick up all these little, there's slack right there, or that's when he should have like lowered a shoulder and gone in, and or she didn't right there, she should, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah,
you're just, this dog works for me, I treat it as well as I can, but it's an employee. And I was talking to this cowboy guy one time. He's a young dude.
Employee?
Kind of, you know, like a non-paid. I pay you in food and board. You
right.
have room and board and
yeah.
occasional pets, and that's it. But you, like, our relationship is not like get in here and get some noogies.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this cowboy guy, he was Australian, and he was like, oh, I train herding dogs,
mm-hmm.
and I sell them for a lot of money. Like, my dogs are the best. I can hand them off to someone and just give them the cues, and my dogs, like, everyone knows me. And I'm like, how many dogs do you tend to have going? He's like, oh, before I left, I had like 5 dogs.
Mm.
And I'm like, but you're here now. He goes, oh, yeah, like 2 of them were on their way. I forget the numbers, but it was, I'm like, well, what do you do with the 1 or 2 dogs that you can't finish?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, I put him down.
Ugh.
I'm like, what?
Did you say that with an Australian accent?
Yeah.
Put like, him down.
I put him down.
Ugh.
I'm
yeah,
like,
that
why?
Sucks.
And he's just like, if I sell that dog when it's not ready, that's my name at the end. The dog, you know, he's like gonna give this like loaded gun to people that's not ready, and he needs to finish training it, and yet to turn it over to like just a regular owner, he's like, they'll go insane, and that's more cruel to the dog. It'll be chewing up furniture, it'll go crazy. that was his rationale of like, this is kinder for me to put this dog down. Mm. I still don't love it. I still don't, but I'm
Yeah, I would just question like, I don't know. Yeah. What do you, is this something that we want to do for money? I don't know. I guess there's a purpose. There's these dogs are needed, but I don't know. There's this place in out near Ojai called Search Dog Foundation, and they take high drive. They rescue. They don't buy from breeders. They rescue dogs from shelters that are high drive dogs. And they have testing to, you know, they have ways of, you know, high drive dogs are have a hard time being pets. Mm-hmm. You know, like some, like those Belgian Malinois and certain types of breeds that are just like high strung, like yeah. They need a freaking job. And hi, Cobra came over. He's like, did you say high strung? Yeah, like I think that's really cool that these dogs that were kind of tossed aside because they didn't make good pets and you know, so many people get these breeds because they think they're cool looking or, oh, that's a police dog. I'm going to get a Malinois puppy. and that's what I'm talking about with these expectations. People, they don't, it takes a lot of work to train a puppy. Like it's so much work. It takes, and that's when I get to a point where I'm like, oh, it's all hopeless. You know, that's why the shelters are just overflowing, because what regular person can do all of that? I don't know. Like, it's a lot to ask of anyone to really actually give your dog enough. Not to be like, it's sometimes I get kind of overwhelmed by it all. Like, oh, it's never going to be good enough. But anyway. Yeah, like I love a program like that, or these prison programs where they take rescue dogs and the prisoners train them and to be pets. But, you know, yeah, I think I don't know. Like I wouldn't be able to be in the business of making money by selling a living being. I just think that there's that's always gonna the well-being of the living being isn't gonna be the top priority if that's how you make your living. Does that make
yeah
sense?
It goes back to thinking a lot and asking yeah. What has meaning, what has value, is everything that
What's
humans
ethical?
Do currently a luxury? Well, I need this to work. Do you need to do that work? Is
yes.
it vital? When we were hunter-gatherers, virtually every activity was in some way a necessity. And then you get into like more of an agrarian, like, why don't I thatch your roof and you do this for me? I'll tend the sheep. I need a dog for the sheep. But then it starts to get into like, there's a lot of sheep. And does everyone need to eat this much mutton or lamb or whatever?
Or do we all need to?
It's a luxury.
Yeah.
It's a luxury to have it. So
yes.
Then, oh, I need this I need this herding dog. Well, you don't, because people don't need the thing that you're selling. But we have to have this this economy in place where everyone has a job and is doing something. So everything is kind of propped up as these spinning plates.
Yeah.
And then the animals that are used over here, that's a useful, that's a good use. I want to have one as a pet. It's basically a balloon that I blow up when I want to play with and then I put it away. Like,
yeah.
No, it's living. You can't, it's a full-time thing. No, I'm going to give it away. I couldn't blow it up enough.
This is a bad one.
This one's bad. It doesn't listen to me. I want it to kind of be cute and be. I take a lot of photos and it's just not cute in the photos ever. It's just always looking at me and I'm like, look at the camera, look at the camera. You know, those things seem
this
very...
one's too stubborn. the stubborn.
Go to most ponds where they're not like regulated. You see a lot of turtles. And Sheila Madrak's been on this show a number of times and she's like, people just give up their turtles. In Florida, people giving away their snakes. You know,
yep.
Just, oh, I got a little big for me.
Yep.
That when you have humans trying to engage with animals in really any way, only the Bob Barker thing of spay and neuter your animals. Please. Like every episode begging people.
Yes.
Just please do this.
Yes.
Just like the only thing that kind of makes some sense because it's just going to be overflowing.
Yes.
It's going to be a nightmare.
Yes.
But then you have people like you. So like there is a job. There is a placement for like, I can help. All of it a luxury, but a necessity within that luxury. So I mean, you could just go on and hunt.
Yeah, and the job wouldn't appeal to me if it didn't have some sort of conflict involved. And like, yeah, it's like, yeah, like I am kind of drawn to this field. Part of what draws me to it is that I see like the need for this to spread the good news, you know, because there is a lot of bad news.
Mm-hmm.
So the good news draws me to it as much as the bad news. And unfortunately, like as long as there are the problem, it's always going to be, there's always going to be the problem.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, I feel like I'm training to be an interpreter is really what I'm training to be. Like I'm a teacher for dogs and I'm an interpreter for humans and their dogs. That's what I want. I want to help people better understand their dogs. And then that makes the relationship better. And that makes the life better for the dogs and the humans. And it keeps dogs in the home, ideally.
I think this was maybe this is a huge generalization, but I know this happened to be true in Reno, but the sanitation department largely had an Italian influence, I think, in New York. And that maybe that's like a cultural thing of like, get in sanitation because the trash never stops.
Exactly.
No one ever got into trash thinking like, and the mafia being like, we can really do a lot if we got control of these trucks.
This is a great comparison. I love it.
But no one ever got into trash thinking like, we're going to solve trash and get rid of it. It's just like, it's going to keep coming. And
always.
Why don't we figure out a way to just effectively and efficiently manage it?
Let's make it as good as it can be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there will always be trash.
There will always be trash. And like, why don't we capitalize on that? Why don't we make a ton of money, have the best trucks, hire the best workers, and just make sure that your trash cans are getting picked up loudly. They're chucked around.
Mm-hmm.
Just so slammed to the ground. But your trash is gone.
Yep.
And, you know, if you look at every industry that way,
mm-hmm.
then dogs are kind of like that. And it sucks. But you can either be a really disappointed altruist. When is it going to be perfect? And every single person has only the amount of dogs they need and they take care of them perfectly.
Yeah.
That will never happen. Likely.
Never, ever.
So let's look at it the other way. Like, all right, well, what are we going to do when this person proves to be a negligent dog owner and or it's overwhelming for them? Or like, not all of it is neglect either. I mean, people pass away unexpectedly.
Oh, yeah. And like I was saying about vet debt, like, I feel like that's a problem. Like, regular folks, especially poor folks, and just anyone who's not rich cannot afford to have a dog, cannot afford to have a pet, period. You're going to go in debt. Even if you have health insurance for your pet, you're going to, at some point, your cat's going to get sick. You're going to have to put it on your credit card. That's just part of having pets. And that sucks. And I feel like so many surrenders are probably financial.
Maybe this is a little nihilistic of a look at it, but ask yourself, if you are that dog owner, and maybe you're saying, no, you know what? When I get hit with that $5,000 bill for the kidney medication, I'm just going to put this animal down and then go, all right, really envision that future. You become real pals with this animal. Mm-hmm. Are you really going to do that? Or are you going to look and say, like, I have the room on my credit card?
Yep.
And if you answered, still going to put it down, maybe you shouldn't get that animal. I don't know that animals are for you. And I think of like so many people that go, I was going to be a vet, but then I thought you'd have to euthanize them. When I really thought about that, I didn't become a vet. That means most people that become vets are like, yeah, I'm doing it. Yeah. I like it. And that makes you feel a little differently about vets. It's like people who are like medical examiners. Like, you're comfortable like doing autopsies and cutting into human flesh? Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
There's just something a little different there that's like, not judging, just saying, I'm not going to be out there putting animals down all the time. I can't do it.
I can't do it. But I would say that I would rather somebody do that than give their dog to a shelter in a way.
Yeah. Well, that's why like the trainer guy saying, I put him down.
Yeah,
he was doing it from like a sympathetic place, not from a cruel, heartless place. To me, I can't get my head around that.
I bet he could find people that would want to adopt them. It's his pride.
Also, like, if the ultra care, I'm going to be really good to your dog and I'm going to give it haircuts all the time and dress it up, and maybe the dog likes that. But I've seen two herding dogs, same person, but go from like being kind of a failed herding dog, not being diligent mm-hmm. enough in the training mm-hmm. to just like a pet mm-hmm. and their eyes change. They spin. I go crazy, like really losing their minds. So
it would have to be the right fit.
It'd have to be just to be someone's pet. It really has to be the right fit, I would say.
Maybe someone living in the country.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Go run!
Well, I know we've talked too long.
You're wrapping it up.
We have to conclude. We have to conclude this.
Okay. I
don't you think?
You know, I want to know more about your childhood. But like, I mean, I just, I'm so curious. Oh, but no,
well,
no,
then
no
in that case,
I'm not going to keep anyone here hostage. I mean, we should conclude this, and thank you for like saying like, all right, it's been enough. But I do like, maybe you'll come back and talk again, because I am curious about like your relationship with animals growing up and like how that impacted all the stuff, every step, you know.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of that. There were a lot of dogs. We'll just say that there was, at one point we had 13 dogs.
Whoa.
That was before Bob Barker.
Man,
influence.
You, like, knew all their names and everything?
Of course I did. Are you kidding me? I named them.
Is this like a farm? Is it, what are we doing?
Strays. Stray dogs. Sweet dad.
And like a
soft-hearted dad.
Residential
hippie.
Neighborhood?
No, we lived in the woods. We lived on 80 acres.
Whoa.
East Texas.
Cool.
Yeah. We didn't even have electricity or running water.
And oh, we got to conclude. Yeah. All right, folks, come on back. Come back next time when Lisa's here. Well, you have to come back now. That,
yeah.
I mean, what a story.
Yeah, yeah.
A cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. An episode that ends on a cliffhanger. And, I mean, the impetus to, like, do this episode largely from an event in my life, or our lives here, that dogs are at the epicenter of, or the forefront. So, like, we can talk about that potentially mm-hmm. as well on the next
That's
visit
right.
with Lisa Delarios. Well, thanks for being here.
It was so fun. Thanks, Dave.
All right. Well, kind of abruptly ended there. And I wouldn't say abruptly, but like unexpectedly, where sometimes I'm just casually or comfortably kind of sitting there and then thinking, sometimes it's on my end, like, wow, we've been doing this a long time. Maybe we should wrap it up. And she voiced that, which I thought was helpful for a guest to be like, is this enough? And I never want to take anyone's day. It was funny afterward. She sent a text like, I could have kept going. And I was feeling like, we should have. So we'll have her back when everyone can regroup, stretch their legs a bit, not have to be in a seated position so long as we're recording. And maybe we'll try a different type of beer, particularly lager. She said she enjoys lager. I've been getting into them more lately as well. So thanks to those of you who support the show on Patreon. I know I always say that, but I genuinely do mean it. And I post stuff there from time to time. It's not as exclusive or bonus content driven as maybe some other ones are, or maybe it could be. I do try to put in bonus stuff frequently, but I think mostly people support that, the Patreon, because they just like the show and want to show some support. So I appreciate that. I'm glad you like the show, especially with no ads. I think that's welcomed in this day and age. And so I won't keep rambling on, but thank you to those of you who do support the show. And this episode in particular, there will be a Patreon about it, about the origin of it. I don't know if you noticed in these two chats, but a lot more personal stuff than I normally reveal. I don't always love that. I kind of like talking with strangers about the things they know, because then it can be all about them. And this one, I divulged quite a bit of stuff, and I don't know why, but I just feel like that's not always necessary. Everyone sharing their life at all times has some value. It's great that we all get to know each other and check in with one another of what is this human experience like for you. And at the same time, it gets a little self-facing for me, other people at all times talking about themselves. Maybe that's just how I view stand-up comedy these days. I don't know. But hopefully you tolerated these two episodes of me sharing some behind-the-scenes or stories from my life, whatever you would call them. But even beyond that, a significant moment in my life involving dogs, and Lisa was very helpful in processing all that. So, not to tease something or make it some dramatic thing, but anyway, I will talk more about that in the Patreon. Okay, let's get out of here. This is a band I've been getting more into in the last few years, And Lisa just has that kind of, there's just a vibe, an energy that's just, it's relaxed, it's calming, mellow, it's comforting when you're around it. Like, yeah, she seems like nothing really gets to her. She's not walking around with balled up energy, or not to say anything negative about people like that. You're dealing with your own stuff. However, when you're around someone where you feel like, oh man, they're about to, I don't know what it is, you lose it at some point, and or, I don't know. You know what I'm talking about. If you've been around someone where you're like, yeah, they are just a pleasant experience. This band is that to me, sonically. And this is off their latest album called Daniel. It's a song called Water Underground. I hope you like it. Thanks for stopping by the Space Cave.